Welcome to another episode of Follow the Data, where we take an in-depth look at some of the work we support around the world and give voice to the work of our partners. In a recent story titled "The Most Dangerous Cup of Coffee in the World," the Wall Street Journal reports on how international companies are taking a closer look at the growth potential of doing business in the Democratic Republic of Congo, a country that has tried to recover from conflict and war for more than two decades. The popularity and demand for specialty coffee made from the highest quality beans has surged in countries such as Congo. And in spite of the challenges and even the dangers of the risks of doing business there, the country is attracting big-name companies. To encourage this growing economy, you may have heard that the governments of Rwanda and Congo announced a cross-border trade agreement to help foster development and peace between the two countries. But what you probably didn't hear is that none of this growth in Congo happened overnight. That just doesn't happen in a country that's been in conflict for 20 years. And what you may be surprised to learn is that much of the progress seen in the country is driven by women and will benefit women entrepreneurs in the region. Since 2008, Bloomberg Philanthropies has supported marginalized women in sub-Saharan Africa, including Congo, by providing them with new job skills, basic business training, life skills, and a support network. We want to ensure that more women are not only a vital part of the country's growth, but emerge as strong participants and beneficiaries. And we don't do it alone. When Bloomberg Philanthropies first began to partner with Women for Women International in Congo in 2008, we identified more than 800,000 women who would benefit from the program. Out of that, more than 115,000 were interviewed, and since then, we've enrolled more than 45,000 at-risk women. The success and impact of this program has encouraged Mike Bloomberg to commit an additional $10 million in the region to expand our Women's Economic Development Program with a direct investment in women and their training. Today, we're going to talk about data and the people who drive the numbers we collect. We want to give you an idea of who these women are. Think about what you know about Congo today. And by the end of the episode, we think you'll have a better sense of the impact of the work. To lead the conversation, we welcome Verna Eccleston, our Women's Economic Development Program Lead, and Abdoulaye Touré, the Country Director for Women for Women International, who as the organization's second male country director in Congo, shares some personal stories of impact he's seen in the women and why he's committed his life to demonstrating the value of women.
Good morning, Touré. Welcome to New York City and welcome to Bloomberg Philanthropies. I'm so happy to see you here. And it makes me just very excited to have an opportunity to finally talk here at Bloomberg with the country director of the DRC. So tell me a little bit today about what a country director does at Women for Women International and how does it feel being the director of such a program in Congo?
Thank you, Verna. My name is Abdoulaye Touré, and I'm the country director for Women for Women International in the DRC. I'm very happy and very proud to be here this morning because Bloomberg Foundation is very, very important for us in Congo. So I had this opportunity to be here this morning and talk about our work is a real opportunity to me. So the country director in Congo is very exciting, but a lot of challenges also. It's exciting because we are working, we have a real focused programs. And the program is focused on women empowerment, which is very, very important in Congo context. So I'm very excited to think every day about which is the best strategy to help women from marginalization, from business growing, from social empowerment, etc. That's my daily thinking, reflection, etc. And also how to manage my team to be sure that we are doing the real work and we have the expected impact. To be a man, as a country director for Women for Women. Really, to be honest, I am very proud to work with this organization. Even it's called Women for Women, and I am a man. But I think the society is man and women. It's not only man, it's not only women. I bring my vision of society, my vision of development, my vision of social justice on this organization. So I'm very, very happy and very committed to work for Women for Women International.
When Bloomberg first partnered with Women for Women in DRC in 2009, Women for Women identified more than 800,000 women who would be eligible for the program. Women for Women had actually interviewed, and out of that 880,000 women, some almost 115,000 women, but was only able to maybe, against our grant specifically, maybe only enroll some 20,000-25,000. Those are large numbers of people. Tell us about the life of one of those women so that people can get an understanding of what that woman looks like. Who is that one in 880,000 women who would be eligible for your programs at Women for Women?
In the context of DRC, there are a lot of marginalized women. And if we talk about marginalized women, Israeli women who are real suffering from diverse gender-based violence, include rape, include economic abuse. So let me take a concrete example. One of these women is called Micheline. She was raped several times and was rejected by even his family, her husband, her family, and she was living alone. So the first things, and we realized that even she was very marginalized, raped, etc. So she was very, very strong. Very strong. At the startup, as we give them $10 a month as a stipend, she starts to save a part of this $10 and initiate a very small business. And after the training, we involve her on the saving and loan groups. It's 25 women come together and save their own money, and after that to borrow a loan from their saving. And she gets a loan and start to grow his business. And now these women are a leader of one of these groups. So two impacts. The one is economic impact. Now she is autonomous on economic side. The second impact is now she was living alone. And now she has a network and she has a social positions in the communities.
No one could possibly, you know, really imagine, you know, unless you go to DRC, you know, you think about what type of job can you create in Congo for a woman who has been set aside from her community? What are the economic opportunities that Women for Women International are creating for these women with an investment from a Bloomberg grant?
Yeah, there are a lot of economic opportunities in Congo, a lot of. So the women we are working with, we have a farmer training, so to grow cassava, maize, and we are following the value chain of cassava. Let's take this example. We are forming a women business group, and this business group is 25 women together, and it is the same group who are doing the saving and loan. So to have money to grow their business. So if you take the cassava value chain in the field in DRC, there are the women who grow the cassava, who know how to transform the cassava, transform it, who know how to sell it, sell it. You see? So, but it's for the 25 women. And everyone can have advantage from that. So they share knowledge, they share the asset, and they have a network in the community.
It's really interesting that you talk about assets as it relates to women, because women farm the very land that they're not allowed to own in DRC or claim to own. And it's their assets belong to their husbands, or the assets belong to the husband's family, but they do the majority of the work. And so they own the work, but they don't own the result. How has your work been, not only being a country director in Congo, but a man who is representing women who normally would not have the rights to own? How do you help them in the value chain to get to the end result so that they can ultimately have income that helps them to support their own families? What's your role in that as a country director? And what do other men think of you doing that?
That's a good question. So we had this question from the women in our program. They told us that what we are doing is great. It's a very good job. But you have to talk to our husband. Because if they don't understand, then it can be a very challenge for us, even we have money or we have assets. So at the startup, what we start to do is to have an informal, just informal discussion with man. And sometimes it's a simple questions. All this violence against women, rapes, economic violence, insult, etc., etc. If it is your own mother, are you accept it or not? And sometimes they become a very aggressive. My mother? Why my mother? Okay, good. If you don't accept it, what are you doing? You are a leader in this community. If it is your mother, you don't accept it. It's your daughter, you don't accept it. What are you doing to stop this? And now we have community dialogue with all communities around the same questions. Because the real problem in Congo is not sometimes the formal law. It's just the social norms. And to change the social norms, we need man leaders, because it's man leaders who keep these social norms. And it is these social norms who marginalized women. And I'm telling you, a lot of people don't understand Congo. They just show what we have on the internet, fighting, soldiers. But for me, the Congo context, we can have a great impact. We can change. The context is there. People are opening, and sometimes it's just there is not a lot of organization. The state is weak to do this job and to work with men, women, girls, boys, etc., to come together and to see how to build their community. And they want to build it, but they need just these opportunities to be together, to discuss. And sometimes we are doing with the couples, husband and wife. And we found that the problem is they never sit to discuss. They never talk about their household.
It's so interesting that you mention that, because I think early day Bloomberg Philanthropy's interest in Women for Women International as an organization was because our CEO, Patty Harris, had received your annual report back in 2007, which talked about men's leadership training. So our early point of entry was the founder, Zainab Salbi, leading training of male soldiers in Congo, which was so fascinating to us, and looking at the work that Women for Women had done in this area. And so we watched your organization in partnership with Bloomberg Philanthropies in that process begin this whole measuring decision-making. We would never think here in the United States consciously about to have decision-making power or not to have decision-making power. But earlier on, your organization was measuring decision-making power of women and very specific indicators which defined one's power to make decisions. And we watched those numbers change over the course of our investments, everything from women having the right to enroll their kids in school, women having the rights to spend household funds, women having the rights to really be at the table. And we brought in an independent evaluator, KPMG, to look at that so that it wouldn't be your self-reported numbers or Bloomberg Philanthropies saying that, yes, you know, based on our investment, women now have an opportunity to make decisions. But what we saw in the KPMG evaluation, KPMG asked in Congo, had the male attitude changed in the community and in country since these women participants were actively involved in this training? 79% of your women graduates said absolutely they saw a change in a man's attitude. 64% of that 79 said it was because the women had a greater understanding of their rights. Another 10% said that it was because they had knowledge of the health and wellness and their well-being to include family planning, nutrients for the children, feeding habits, and managing the households. And another 26% said because there was an economic opportunity that was available to them. But these were interviews with men and graduates. And so the men in the community said that they saw this change in women because the women had knowledge of their rights. And then we talked to the women graduates about if they saw a decrease in violence against women, your graduates. 70% of those women said that there was a decrease in violence as a result of participating. And the men who saw that said that that was due to women's understanding their rights. You as a man, what is it exactly that you're doing that's making these numbers change so rapidly that's getting people to understand their rights? And what is the importance of understanding your rights in the context of DRC? I know that's a lot, but I'm just excited by your numbers. So
you know. Okay, thank you. I think you really explain well the approaches. It's a combination of all the approaches we have. First, we work with women to know their rights, to start to have assets, to grow business. And this part of the training is very, very important because women realize I'm very important in this community. I am strong and I'm doing amazing job. So how to take advantage of that? And the women start to talk with their husband because you see in the Congo context, it's the women who are doing really all the work in the farmers. The hard work is for women. But if the fruit come, it is for men. That's the reality of this context. We are working with men to train them on women's rights, to train them on how to build a household, how to build a community, how to work together, how to discuss. Sometimes I had some discussion with a group of men, and they thought, I'm always asked the same questions. Why you are violent? And sometimes some tell me that, okay, you see, I don't have really a job. I don't have money. So I'm asking myself if I am a man. And sometimes when I spend the whole day looking for money or something to bring home, I didn't find anything and they come home. If my wife told me, oh, you didn't bring anything, how are we eat today? I don't know how to answer. So I become angry and violent. That's some feedback we get from man. They said, okay, that's good. So why you don't explain to your wife? Maybe she can help you. And I know she can because she's wife is on the program. I know she can help her. So just talk with your wife. Maybe she can help you. And after that, after a week or month, I meet with the same man and ask the same question. You guys, you are very nice. What you tell me is true. My wife, I didn't know that she is very strong. So now we discuss. If I have nothing, I ask her, maybe she have something. You see, sometimes it's very simple to push things, but it's a global...
Oh, yes. I was going to say, it's not, you know, limited to DRC, that there's a group of men somewhere who's denying women their rights and access to resources. But I'm amazed by the fact that Women for Women International, when entering into DRC, you know, they looked in the area of one's power to make a decision, working within the family, working with the men and taking men to leadership and leading their families. A question that I have for you, what do you say to a man who rapes in your men's leadership program? And what do you say to the woman who comes to join your program who has been raped?
Yeah, we have a lot of women in our program who was raped. And sometimes when they was just raped, they need healthcare quickly. So the first thing is to send them to the health center, the very posh health center, to have this care. And then the context is the women who are raped are very marginalized by men, by other women also. Because the feeling is it is the fault of the women. They don't accuse the perpetrator, but they accuse the women. And the first work we are doing is to try to help her to rebuild his life, to rebuild confidence, to understand that the real problem is not her, it's the perpetrator. And she has to understand that first and have a force to rebuild his life. And we create a network for her. Each single training centers, we have about 300 women who meet daily. So in this context, we build a relationship with other women in the program, and little by little, she became very confident and they start to work with others. The men, we start to work with the men leaders in the community. And it's each man leaders we train have to train other 10 men. So the message is come directly from community leaders, not from us. Okay, and after that, we put in place what we called a men discussion groups. So in this group, men discuss what means to be a man in the community. What is acceptable for their community? What is not acceptable for them? And what is not acceptable, what they are doing. And after that, we open to the women leaders. So it became a community forum with women's leaders and men leaders. And it takes another step because women are here to tell their problems, what's happening with them by men, and what men can solve this. And after that, they go to find a solutions. What kind of solution? There are a solution they can do in community levels. There are some solutions they can't do according to the law. So we need to go beyond. And this become a advocacy thematics handled by community itself, because it is the community who found all these solutions. So that's the process.
So during the course of our discussion this morning, I heard you talk about some very important things. You talked about a community assessment to identify need, to identify those women in those communities that have been most marginalized or separated at the result of war and conflict. You talked about rebuilding those networks by putting people or bringing people together in groups, almost like the community taking care of itself, one person at a time. Working through those women to identify opportunities for themselves and their families, economic opportunities that would lead them to assets in the value chain, helping them in return to take care of their families and their community and their country. You know, we hear oftentimes said that, you know, an investment in a woman is an investment in the world. So we see Congo as one part of a larger world.
Yeah. For me and for women, I would like to start by thanks Bloomberg for all the support, all the good things Bloomberg are doing in Congo. There is not a lot of foundations who support Congo. And the support from Bloomberg is very, very important. It's important because with the Bloomberg support, we have a real impact. One of the impact is when these women come in our programs, we are doing baseline. And the daily earning income of women generally is $0.7 at the startup on the baseline. 1 year after, we do the end line, and it become $1.1, the daily income per women. And after 2 years after the baseline, it's 1.8. So the evolution, income earning evolution is there. And it's very clear for us. And now we from 2013 to 2016, Bloomberg support more than 80,000 women in Eastern Congo. And that thus is huge support for Eastern Congo. And this support have impact, and the authority, we work with the authorities, the ministries of gender, ministry of health, etc. And everyone appreciates and know what we are doing. Even other organizations, other UN systems, etc. Most of them, they come to me and say, oh, you are doing a wonderful job. How can we partner to work together? Okay. So all this is because we have Bloomberg support. I think this organization is based. I just come in this organization. I have less than 2 years with Women for Women. But what they understood is the organization is grow because of Bloomberg support. So at the end, our vision at the end is really to have a big social movement for social change. Okay, that is our long-term visions. And where we are now is good. We have a great impact, on, especially on the economic side, but also in social justice side. So we need to continue the work with women, reinforce the work with men, and the community dialogue. All this part to work together to change the communities. I think that's where I really want to emphasize our work in the future. We start to do it, but we need to reinforce it and to reinforce the community and dialogue, and to reinforce also the advocacy handling by community, so that the government, the authorities know what's happened and they know what they can change, because it's not to work. So that's where I think we need to emphasize our work in the future.
I want to thank you so much for coming here to Bloomberg today and sharing with us your work. And most importantly, as a woman, thank you for joining us women who are making changes at this table and encouraging other men to take up their responsibility and leadership so that we can continue our investment in a woman so that she can continue making an investment in the world. Thank you so much.
That's all the time we have for this episode of Follow the Data. We're glad we could share some of the stories and perspectives from Congo with you. If you'd like to help the country reach its potential, we invite you to visit equalfooting.org, another Bloomberg Philanthropy-supported partnership. There, you can explore where investments are being made in women in Congo, Burundi, and Rwanda, and how to get involved and build on the success. And if you'd like to learn more about women's economic development work in sub-Saharan Africa, be sure to listen to episode 4 of our podcast, where Christine Kondo of Sustainable Harvest Rwanda shared stories of some of our work in Rwanda. And please visit Bloomberg.org and follow us on Twitter at BloombergDOTORG. As our founder, Mike Bloomberg, says, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Until next time, keep following the data.